I see they all took me up on that one as well. None of you, though, can go unless you're helping to teach. Anyways, so as we get into this third week of this Life Like Jesus series, I've really enjoyed being able to teach this. As I've said the last couple weeks, the themes that we're talking about in these weeks have come through just a lot of just wrestling in my own heart, things that God's calling me to, that I believe he's also calling our congregation, our church to as well. So this morning we're going to do our sermon is called Stop, Notice, and Then Engage, and you'll see why as we walk through. So as we get started, like it's no secret that our society, our culture is extremely busy, right? Just ask anybody how they're doing and what is their response. 99.8% of the time, it's this, right? You can probably say it in your head or out loud if you want, but it's, I'm doing good, dot, dot, dot. You can almost feel the dot, dot, dot in their response. I'm busy. I got a lot going on. Like, I'm doing well, but I'm busy. And it's almost like we could just wear this shirt around all the time, which you can find if you Google, I am very busy. Like, I feel like this is what we, like, display as we interact with one another. And it's almost like busy has become a badge of honor or, like, a rite of passage for our culture. And the thing that's dangerous about busyness is that it oftentimes can give us a false sense of worth. Like, I am busy or I do a lot, therefore I am a lot, is a lie that our culture has definitely fed us in our society. It's just the more you do, the more you accomplish, the more busy, the more, like, less time that you have, it's like somehow you're more important, you're more valuable, or whatever this is. And if you try going down that road, you'll find that it doesn't lead anywhere good. And it's not actually helpful. So this is what we do. And we do then the same with our kids, right? Like we almost busy our kids because there's this thought, well, I've got to get them involved in everything for them to be meaningful and matter in our society. So it's like, yeah, how are your kids doing? It's like, yeah, well, kids are busy. They're in dance and in soccer. They're in basketball. They're in basket weaving, just in case, taekwondo, art, music, not just one music. We got to do piano, guitar, singing, kazoo lessons because you just never know when it might happen. Science, because we've got to take care of the academic club, so they're in science club, they're a mathlete, they're in nature society, spiritual side, we've got to get them involved. They're involved in church activities of all kinds. They're glass making. We're also involved in Young Republicans, Young Democrats, Young Independents, just because we want to let them make their choice politically. They're in sports stacks, yearbook club, marching band, and the football team at the same time, which is really crazy, but that's how awesome my kid is. And you see, like, I have pictures of it all on Instagram. Just let me show you. Like, this is what or Snapchat, depending on your age. And so we do this, like, all the time, and I'm so guilty of this, too, and I've actually tried to watch myself. Like, when people ask how I'm doing, I actually just like to say, I'm either good or I'm actually not doing good, and I don't like to add that word busy, but I still do it all the time. But there's some of us, so there's two kinds of people out there. Well, this is not a scientific thing. This is leading nowhere important fast. But anyways, some of you have the gift of what I would call being present in the moment. And then there's others of us that have the gift of, like, multitasking and seeing what else needs to be done while we're semi-engaging with what is in front of us. And so this shows that these two dynamics, and you are married to each other. Like, that's just how this works. Well, I'll get there. This shows itself in the worst way or the most evident in what I would call the dreaded potluck dinner, family potluck. And so this is Michelle and I to a T, what I'm about to describe. First of all, I show up and I'm wearing this shirt, if you will, not that one. I'm sorry I'm late. I didn't want to come. So the moment I get to this thing, I have got a detailed strategic plan and it is flawless. It's amazing. First of all, we get there, we hit the food, but we don't go right away. We got to wait just a few minutes, let some people go. But then we want to get in there before all the good stuff is gone. We want to make sure that we get the kids' food early on so that they can be taken care of and busy and off sitting aside so they can take care of what they need to do. Then we sit down, small talk, small talk, small talk, dessert, very important. Wait 24.2 minutes after dessert, wrap up small talk, look at the time. Better get the kids home to bed. It's time to get the kids to bed. I don't want them to be cranky. Then tomorrow, we've got to get the kids to bed. I don't want them to lose sleep. Sleep is very important. So we help clean up just enough that people think that you're courteous. And then, boom, you jump in the car. The kids fall asleep on the way home. You drop them off in bed. Microwave popcorn, house hunters, and bedtime. Right? Raise your hand if that is, like, what you want in life, right? That's the perfect thing. Now, if this is you, your spouse did not raise their hand, because this is who you are married to. There's people out there that are actually excited to go to family potlucks, and they are wearing this t-shirt, Addicted to Green Bean Casserole. Well, it's just for a moment, like, have you ever thought about the green bean casserole? Like, this is how I'm convinced that this whole green bean casserole came to be about. Like, one day, the French's onion straws, crispy onion straws people were like, you know what, apparently no one likes crispy fried onion straws that are served in a cardboard tin. So what are we going to do? We need to sell more of these things. Does anybody have an idea? And they get in a strategic room, and they're thinking, And then someone's like, I know. And it's like, what is it, Stan? What if we, stay with me, what if we just made a lot of green beans? Okay, I'm intrigued. Well, then we'll take the cream of mushroom soup, because the Campbell's people say they can't sell that either. We'll dump that into the green beans, put the crispy onion straws on top, bake it, call it a casserole, and the Baptists will love it, and all the church people will buy it. Like, this is how I'm convinced that green bean casserole came to be about. So anyways, if you're this person, you're wearing this t-shirt, you get to the dreaded or the blessed potluck meal, and you begin to talk, and you enjoy said conversation, and you get lost in the conversation. It's as if nothing else is happening in the world around you but you, this person, and this conversation. Meanwhile, your kids are just going nuts. They're hanging off of everything. The kid has just grabbed the 13th Oreo cookie, but yet for you, conversation's getting better and better and more meaningful and deeper. There's depth, meaning there's nothing else going on in your world outside of this present moment, this present conversation. The whole world has ceased to exist. Your spouse, meanwhile, has tapped you on the shoulder for what seems like the 8th to 10th time, saying, I think we need to go. And you say, with a complete lack of integrity, just a few minutes. It is now 2 a.m. Your spouse is just laying on the floor, holding onto your pants. Can we please leave? Luckily, House Hunters is still going on. There's still time because they show up back to back. They're tugging you on your pants. And then you say, oh, would you look at the time? We should probably be going. I'm so sorry to keep you waiting. Why do the kids have chocolate all over their face, dear? Don't ask, is what you respond. So anyways, all this to say, we're extremely busy. And so whether you're the multitasking kind of personality or whether you're the one that's immersed in the moment and it's this conversation, whatever it is that's right in front of you, we're all guilty of missing out at times, based on either of these things, on what God may have for us. You know, and the reality is for all of us, it's hard to keep up with our family, our friends, our work, social media, let alone all the stuff that you and just your children have going on the weekends and evenings and this and that. And so in many cases, this busyness can actually lead us to a place where we're not able to get close to those who need the love of Christ so much. And so often we retreat to our own space instead of drawing close to those who may be hurting or poor. Or we just retreat to those relationships that we know or whatever that may be. And this is what I find so amazing about the life of Jesus, is that over and over again, we find him connecting with and spending time with the lowly and the broken among him. So whether it's the woman at the well, whether it's the woman who anoints his feet, the thief on the cross, the bleeding woman, the Roman soldier, children, a dead friend even, Jesus takes time to be with those who are in need and impact their world and give them hope and life. And so I'm going to read this passage from Luke 5 where he says, after this, Jesus went out and saw a tax collector by the name of Levi, sitting at his tax booth. Follow me, Jesus said to him, and Levi got up, left everything, and followed him. Then Levi held a great banquet for Jesus at his house, and a large crowd of tax collectors and others who were eating with them. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, who belonged to their sect, complained to his disciples, why do you eat and why do you drink with tax collectors and sinners? And Jesus answered them, well, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but it's the sick. I've come to call the right, not come to call the righteous, but the sinners to repentance. So Jesus' mission here on earth, when he's living and walking among us, this power of the incarnation that we talked about 2 weeks ago, his mission was to help sinners and those broken and destitute to find healing, to find wholeness, and to find hope in him. And so we talked about that 2 weeks ago with the incarnation, just the bright light of Christ coming into our dark world so that we could experience, all of us can experience new life, healing, hope. And so if we're then going to live a life like Jesus, like we're talking about throughout this series, then we ought to emulate the life of Jesus, right? And so this morning, I want us to look at two examples, two back-to-back stories of Jesus in Luke. And as we read this story, I want you to keep in mind this calling of Jesus that he claims for himself earlier in Luke. It says, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim liberty to the captives and recovering of sight to the blind, to set at liberty those who are oppressed, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And so as Luke then walks through these two stories that we're going to read back to back, he's trying to highlight something in the life of Jesus that he wants us to understand, that he wants us to grab a hold of, that he wants us to begin to live with, and also to find comfort in as well for ourselves. So I want to read these stories, and then I'm going to make a few observations. And Tyler, don't put these words on the screen. I want to do like I did last week, and I want you just to picture yourself in the story. Just immerse yourself as best you can. Just begin to picture, imagine that you're one of the disciples traveling with Jesus, that you're on the road with him, and you're watching how he's doing these things and operating and loving people. So just go ahead, and if you close your eyes if you need to, whatever it is, but just picture this story as you hear it. So it says in Luke 18, "As he drew near Jericho, a blind man was sitting by the roadside begging. And hearing a crowd passing by, he inquired what this meant. They told him, 'Well, Jesus, Nazareth is passing by.' And he cried out, 'Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me.' And those who were in front rebuked him, telling him to be silent. But he cried out all the more, 'Son of David, have mercy on me.' And Jesus stopped and commanded him to be brought to him. And when he came near, he asked him, 'What do you want me to do for you?' He said, 'Well, Lord, let me recover my sight.' And Jesus said to him, 'Recover your sight. Your faith has made you well.' And immediately he recovered his sight and followed him, glorifying God. And all the people, when they saw it, gave praise to God. And then he entered Jericho and was passing through. And behold, there was a man named Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was rich. And he was seeking to see who Jesus was. But on account of the crowd, he could not because he was small in stature. So he ran on ahead and climbed up into a sycamore tree to see him, for he was about to pass that way. And when Jesus came to the place, he looked up and said to him, 'Zacchaeus, hurry and come down, for I must stay at your house today.' So he hurried, came down, and received him joyfully. And when they saw it, they all grumbled, 'He's gone to be in the guest of a man who is a sinner.' Zacchaeus stood and said to the Lord, 'Behold, Lord, the half of my goods I give to the poor, and if I have defrauded anyone of anything, I restore it fourfold.' And Jesus said to him, 'Today salvation has come to this house, since he also is a son of Abraham, for the Son of Man came to seek and save the lost.'" Again, at the end of this story, Jesus is sharing his mission that came to seek, save the lost. So we have these two separate encounters back to back in Luke, but the same Jesus. So we have a poor blind beggar in the first story, and then we have a rich tax collector in the next story. Both are experiencing brokenness, incredible brokenness, and are in need of a savior. They're in need of help and hope. So the blind man, he's poor, he's begging for money. He was looked down on society, but not by Jesus. Meanwhile, Zacchaeus was a sinful man. He was wealthy and rich, and he seemed to have everything, sure. But yet he was also looked down on society for the way that he went about his business, just the way he would lie about it. And also, literally, he was looked down on because he was short and small. So there's three observations that I want to make from these stories from the life of Jesus. First, for us, is to notice the broken and then respond with compassion. In each of these stories, we see that Jesus is traveling, and he stops, and he's noticing someone who's broken, who's destitute, who's hurting. And in either case, Jesus could have ignored the blind man or ignored Zacchaeus, and no one would have criticized him for it. No one would have said, "Hey, Jesus, what about that person over there?" In fact, they were trying to keep them away from Jesus. So in either case, he could have ignored and kept going, but he doesn't. He could have been too busy for the beggar and kept going. Jesus has a world to save, after all. What's one beggar? But he doesn't. He stops, and he asks them to bring the man to him. He gets close to him, and he asks him a question. "What do you want me to do for you?" The Son of God himself walks into this man's brokenness and asks him a question. "What can I do for you?" This is an amazing moment if you just look at the character of Jesus, where Jesus is looking him in the eye, and he notices him. He's not just a blind beggar. He's way more than that. He's way more valuable. The same for Zacchaeus. He's up in a tree as Jesus is walking by because the wee little man was he. And so Jesus looks up and he addresses him. Now, Now, of course, Zacchaeus doesn't have the monetary poverty like we see with the blind beggar, but he's spiritually bankrupt. None of this money is satisfying Zacchaeus, and he's realizing it. He's realizing it at this point. I've worked my whole life to get all this stuff, and it's nothing. It's meaning nothing. So his life is feeling empty. He was poor in spirit. So both the blind beggar and Zacchaeus are experiencing poverty of spirit. In Matthew 5:3, the Beatitude, if you were here last Easter when we walked through all these, it says, "Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." And then the Message, I like the way Eugene Peterson says the beginning, "You're blessed when you're at the end of your rope. With less of you, there's more of God and his rule." So both of these men, what we see in these stories is that they're at their end. They're desperate for something more, whether it's a physical healing, whether it's just salvation from kind of this emptiness. But no one seemed to notice them. No one even seemed to care. So many just walked by them time and time again. They didn't think that they were worth it, and yet Jesus did. He saw something beyond their brokenness. He saw something beyond their need, beyond their sin. He saw a child of God who was deserving of love, of attention, of his presence. So the question for you and all of us is, will I slow down enough to notice? Will you look at your neighbor and just kind of criticize their lawn or their actions or their kids? Or will you slow down enough to get to know them, maybe understand why their lawn is long or whatever it may be? What's causing them, what's going on deep down inside that's maybe causing that thing that frustrates you to be the way it is? What about that mean, angry person that you work with that makes everything seem so unpleasant? Perhaps maybe they need to experience God's love through your life more than they need just your passing by at work and ignoring. But Chad, that's hard. That's uncomfortable. Well, if you want to live a life like Christ, maybe we need to examine his life and see how he operated and worked among people. Slow down enough, notice them, and then once you've noticed, respond in compassion. Hear their story, look past brokenness, and try to see people as God sees them. Try to remove yourself and get rid of our own natural filter and begin to see people the way God sees them, the way he loves them. Look into their eyes, hear their stories, and they may reject you. They may. Don't take that personally. I pray that you'd be rooted enough in the love of God that you could love them beyond that, care for them. Don't force yourself on them, because that can get weird, but also don't retreat. Allow God to change you enough so that his love can then flow through you. Will you slow down enough to notice? Will you respond in love and compassion the way that we see Jesus in these stories and so many others? Now, the second observation that I have, and this seems so obvious, but yet I wonder if our lives don't often reflect the opposite of it. And that's, love is not a waste of our time. In both of these stories, we see how people actually tried to keep Jesus away from the beggar and away from Zacchaeus. So in the blind beggar scene, they rebuke the man for trying to even call out to Jesus, like, "Hey, he doesn't have time for you. You're just a beggar. Stop. He's reaching out for help and healing, and those with Jesus, stay away. Be quiet. Jesus has places to go." And thankfully, this is the character of our God. Jesus ignores their rebuke, and he goes right over to the man. He calls him over. All it takes oftentimes to change someone's life, for them to be impacted by the love of Christ, is just for us to notice them and to respond like they matter and to see them beyond their brokenness and love them no matter what we see on the outside. And then the story of Zacchaeus, the religious leaders couldn't believe that Jesus was going to be in the house of a sinner. "Jesus, he's not worth it. Don't you see all that he's done? How could you go into his home? Like, don't you realize the money to even purchase that home was stolen? It's dishonest. And now you're going to go there and be a guest and eat? How could you ever do this, Jesus?" And this convicts me, because how many times have you looked past someone, maybe because I thought they were too broken or too sinful or whatever it may be? Whether it's too poor in spirit, as society would say, or maybe folks that are just caught up in sin. Can we maybe lead in love of God and see people the way Jesus does and put our own stuff down? People change because they experience the love of Christ. Like, the love of Christ is what causes us to change and be transformed. The pure, wonderful love that values you, that notices you, that has compassion on you, is also the same love that's for others in the midst of their brokenness. And so one, the story is too poor and broken to be even worth Jesus' time. And people are saying, "Oh, no, that's not worth it." And the other is too sinful, too selfish, And Jesus, how dare you go there? But what does Jesus do in both these instances? Is he stops and he notices them, two different men, but one amazing God. And so as I'm sharing this, as I'm walking through the story, is there someone coming to your mind, or is there a few people that are maybe coming to your mind? Who is maybe around you that you recognize maybe you've been playing it safe or just ignoring? Who is Jesus directing you to help them to experience the love of Jesus in their lives, the way you, hopefully you've experienced as well? I encourage you to evaluate your heart now. Ask yourself difficult questions. Is this person worth it enough for you to take a step in their direction? Is this person worth possible rejection and hurt on your part? And yes, I agree that oftentimes we need to put in healthy boundaries in place as we get closer to people, especially people who are extremely broken and hurting, and we might need to set up guardrails over our time and things like that. And this is what's so confusing about these scenarios in the Gospels, is that Jesus has these one-time encounters. But what about for you, where you're working, where you're living, where you're maybe married, hopefully kidding, to someone who is in need of the love of God? Here's what I'll say. I just encourage you start by loving. Don't worry about figuring all the details out. Don't let that stuff keep you from just expressing the love of God to others. Pray for them. Seek God for discernment on how you operate and the boundaries that may take in place. And then this is extremely important too, because this is why we have the body of Christ around us to lean on. That we're not doing this on our own. It's not just like this is me and my calling or you and your individual calling. We're in this all together. We're not doing this on our own. So as we reach out, as we extend, as we give of ourselves, as we feel that, then we pour into one another as well. Come back next week because we'll talk a lot more about that. And this is one of the biggest reasons why we gather here on Sundays. It's to support one another, to pray together, to worship together, to share in the teaching. This is not, and I hope you guys get it, and I'm going to keep hammering it home, this is not an isolated observational time. If all we're doing is listening to me, your faith is going to be really, really limited. We've got to share with this in each other and support one another. This has got to be more than just an observational, I'm going to go and listen to someone talk. We've got to make it more across. And I know in our society where we're so individualistic, it's really hard to think about how do we do this? How do we open up to one another? But as we do this, as we give of ourselves, as we reach out, we got to support one another. This is so, so crucial and so important. So I want you also to wrestle with this today. Is there others worth it? Or do you feel like religious leaders, like the religious leaders, where it's just like, you know what, stay away. Jesus is busy. I'm busy. I've got so much going on. I can't do that. You can't go into that house, Jesus. And the last observation is this, to get close. The powerful thing that I see in Jesus' response is his proximity, that he gets close to the beggar. And the passage said, and when he came near, proximity. We can't love if we don't ever get close. It's when you hear someone's story that you begin to have a greater understanding and awareness of what's going on in their life, and compassion increases as our proximity does. It's so easy to sit on the outside and just criticize and put things on Facebook and do all of that, but it's important for us to get to know people and hear their stories, because as we do that, as we get close to people, that's when our compassion and love for them increases. So when you talk to someone face-to-face who might be maybe struggling with something like addiction, you begin to hear the source of their hurt and why this addiction has even built up in their life, you begin to respond with compassion. You don't just label them, but you see them as who they are and who God has created them to be. When you find out the guy who cheated on his wife maybe never had a dad who showed him how to be a husband and father, and you can respond in compassion just instead of calling him names or whatever it is that we do so often, we begin to help that person. Maybe say, you know what, maybe I can help you learn how to become a husband or father because you never had that example. And so we respond in compassion, calling people to repentance, but doing that in love, not name-calling. We find out maybe the woman who's just in pain and feels withdrawn, and you find out what their story is, and you get to know them. You begin to push through that and help them to come out because you understand maybe what's going on in their life, and you love them through that instead of just taking it personally that maybe they didn't reach out to you because they're hurting. Get near. Have people over. Hear their stories. Get to know them. Go into their homes if you're invited. Jesus was pretty bold here, but he's also God. You're not. Maybe if you see a neighbor doing, you know, help them out. If you have kids, be the house in the neighborhood where the kids come to hang out. Invest money in that. Do whatever that takes. Be the safe place in the neighborhood. Yes, it will be tiring at times. But what an example for your kids, and what a great way for us to share the love of Christ. And then do mentoring, just get involved in people's lives. One of the things that I love about the programs that we're connected with, I think is really powerful, whether it's Family Promise, like we talked about today, Safe Families, or it's the refugee ministry that some of us are involved in, or there's a new ministry we're going to hear about next week called Fathering.me, which is basically just helping Christian men connect with young men who are experiencing unexpected pregnancy. So the director is connecting with the pregnancy centers and trying to match up men with younger men to help mentor them in this whole thing. And the thing that I love about all of these, and there's many others out there, is that there's a connection, there's a relationship built. That it's not just dropping stuff off, and while that's meaningful and important, definitely that those are important things to do, it's also important for us to get close, have people over, get to know people, hear their stories, mentor them, maybe walk with them through life. It's about getting involved in the lives of people. And yeah, it might be messy, it might be tricky, but within that we can find the beauty of God. It's so powerful. So, why does all of this matter? Why are we talking about this morning? Because Jesus came to earth to live among us, not for the healthy, but for those who need a doctor, for those that are sick. And we're called, for those of us that consider ourselves followers of Christ, we're called to live like Jesus Christ. So as we study his life, we don't just study it so that we can be transformed by it. Yes, we do, but also so that others can be transformed by his love and his life as well. And so we do this so that God can break through in people's lives, so that we can see his love spreading throughout our region and throughout our world. And let me tell you, when you see God break through someone else's life, your faith increases incredibly. And so we do this because we've been filled with the love of Christ. It has to come from that place. If you leave here just feeling guilty and kind of, gosh darn it, I'm going to go serve more, but it's just in your own strength, that you're gonna fizzle out after a while. It's got to come out of just an overflow and a filling of God's love in our lives. And my prayer for all of us that we experience his love in such a powerful way that it would overflow into others' lives. It's got to come from that place. Otherwise, it's just going to be for a limited period of time. We've got to flow from this love of Christ. So here's my challenge for all of us, and this is more of a practical challenge. I'm calling it the neighboring challenge, if you will. You can call it whatever you want. I will not be offended. But what I'd like to challenge us all to do, or encourage us to do, and if you listen to my newsletter, video newsletter, I said the word encourage about 42 times. So I love that word. So I'm going to encourage you to do this over the next 2 months, is I want you to think about somebody. Hopefully, if somebody came to your mind that you feel like maybe I need to reach out and get to know them better, get to know their story, have them over. Maybe have a neighbor. If there's someone across the street or next to you that you don't really know, have them over for dinner or s'mores or just anything, like a high five, and talk to each other for 5 minutes. But just invite somebody into your home. Maybe there's a coworker that you don't know well. Maybe go out to dinner with them or do something or take them out to lunch. I just want you over the next 2 months, whoever that was, I pray that you've been able to that God's been leading you to somebody or a family or a group of people in your mind. I just encourage you to take a step. And over the next 2 months, don't let it go linger, because I know how these things go. Oftentimes in the moment, it's like, yeah, I need to do that. And then we get busy and we don't. It's hard to step into. And so I'd like you even to write down, I think there's lines at the bottom of the bulletin, that as we close here, if there's a name or two names or five names, just write those down so it can be a reminder for you to invite them over and get to know them and get to hear their story and just build a relationship with somebody that maybe you don't know that well. Because I think that can be really, really powerful. I think one thing in our society, in our culture, that we don't do well with is having people we don't know in our homes. Like, that's a really hairy, big, scary thing for some reason. And I think that the church can begin to lead the way in creating a sense of cult community and love in our culture by just doing that, by just having different people over, or having them to your backyard or to your front yard or your side yard, whatever you want to do. But just getting to know people that we don't know as well. So that's my encouragement or my challenge to you. I'm going to have the worship team come back up. Because I want to end with this then as well. I know I was kind of throughout the whole sermon, I was essentially talking to people who I would say have made a commitment to follow Christ. And this is a call to live a life like Christ if we've made that decision, that commitment. But I want to end with this as well. If you feel like you're there, and I don't know where you are in your spiritual journey, but if you feel like perhaps just in life, you've been overlooked, or you've been like on the outside, like you can identify with the blind beggar or Zacchaeus, It's like you feel like as you've walked throughout life, just people don't even notice. Or maybe you don't feel like people in the church even notice. First of all, I want to say for that, especially, that I'm sorry. If you've experienced church hurt or being overlooked in the church, I know how significant and painful that can be. This is one of the difficult parts of being a pastor, is that I know that I'm a dude, like, right? I'm a person. There's going to be things that I forget and miss, and people may feel hurt by that. And that breaks my heart, and yet that's a reality just kind of life. So I just want to extend in this place, if you've been that way, if you've been hurt by someone, especially in the church or outside, I just want to say I'm sorry. I hear your story. We love you here. We're not going to do it perfectly. But I hope that you maybe experience the love of Christ through the community here, because I think it's really, really valuable. And if you saw yourself in this story, whether you feel like the blind beggar or Zacchaeus or somewhere in between or both of them, I want you to know the truth, that Jesus values you way more than you probably value yourself. He wants to help you. He loves you desperately, that his love for you is beyond measure, beyond the words, the limited words that I can use to describe it. It's bigger than all of that. And that Jesus desperately wants to get close to you. If you feel like you've been crying out for help, and no one has been reaching out to you, and no one's been even hearing you, and you feel like that blind beggar, you can identify with him as crying out, people are like, shh, shh, stay away. If you feel like you're in that place, know that Jesus sees that, and he wants you to come close to him, and he's points you out in the midst of all the crowd. If you feel like Zacchaeus, like you're just so caught up in sin and there's no way you even have the worth to like get close to Jesus or even enter into church building, whatever that may be, that Jesus sees you up there as you're trying to hide. And he wants to be in your home. He wants to be close to you. That's the love of Christ. And so for you, I just hope that you, and pray, ask you this question, is will you allow him to get close to you? Will you respond to his love as well? For all of us, let's not reject the love of Christ, because there's nothing better in this world. And then for those of us who've experienced this love, may we not reject this love to others, but may we be conduits of his love. May we step into brokenness. May we step into those different situations and just love people, hear their story, be okay with the mess, and meet Christ in that. Michelle's going to lead us in a song called God of Justice, and it's more of a prayer. I think it's a new one for us here. And as they sing this, you can stand or you can sit down and just write and maybe pray for a certain person or a couple people that you've been thinking of throughout this message, or even for yourself. But I just want you to make this song your prayer. And the thing that I love about this song is that there's like a tag or a chorus or a bridge, whatever the musical term is. Just says, fill us up and then send us out. Like, we've got to be filled up with God's love so we can send out. And so if you've been pouring into a lot of others, I pray that you experience the fullness and just the filling of God's love today, so that you can continue on the path that he's calling you to do. So no matter where you're at, I just pray that we'd all experience God's love so it can come through us. So you can stand, or you can just sit and write and journal and pray, and then Michelle will call us all to stand at some point throughout this worship set. So let me pray for us. God, we just thank you so much for this message, just for the power of your gospels, Lord. And even in those stories, there's so much that we didn't even get to. There's so much richness about your character and who you are. Lord, your love, your healing touch, your healing power, the power of that as people get close to you, their lives change. And I pray, Lord, that we would be that for our world, that we would extend your love to those who need it. And Lord, if we haven't experienced that love, I pray that you would allow us to experience it. I pray that we would know how much you care and love us, how much you value us, how it doesn't matter what people around us are saying about our value, about our worth, or even what we say about those things. Because Lord, you notice us, you call us close to you, and Lord, you get down near us and say, what do you need? Just thank you so much for this truth. Pray that we wouldn't just get in our heads, but it would move down into our hearts and just carry forth through our lives. We thank you so much for this morning. I give you this day. In your name, amen.